This is The Real Estate Show for Chisholm and Gayman. We know Bayside.
Spring has sprung. The grass is res. I wonder where the Bodies is. Do you remember that poem, Sam Gayman?
No, Eddie. Actually, enlighten me.
It's an old poem. I think it was written by Anonymous, that bloke again.
Oh, yeah. Anonymous. He's prolific.
Indeed. Good morning, Sam Gayman.
Good morning, Eddie.
How are you today?
Good to see you.
Good to see you too.
How am I? Yeah, I'm fantastic.
Yeah. And TK, good morning to you.
Good morning, Eddie.
How are you today?
I'm excellent, thank you.
What are we talking about today?
Well, look, we often get asked questions by potential buyers and vendors in relation to they've got an existing tennis court that hasn't been used for 20 years. Should they renovate it or change it, get rid of it? Same with swimming pools, same with spas. So those bigger plus one items is a big question mark for vendors when they're looking at value, and also for purchasers as far as should they be paying the extra to get the extra.
Did I just see recently in the news a tennis court being sold? Just the tennis court?
Often you'll find that's the case, Eddie. So it's not uncommon. We're often finding that clients and Sam and I have been through this process a few times with different clients where they're asset rich but cash poor. And so what they'll do is they'll subdivide their land to have the ability. In fact, I'm just going through one in Port Melbourne at the moment where we're looking at taking off some land to actually allow that particular party to stay at the actual home.
Because you'd certainly get a house onto a tennis court.
Very much so. And that's one of the things for the owner to look at as well, is whether or not they go through the permit process to getting a pre-approval and designing the house that's going to be next to them.
Yes.
Or they can potentially put a covenant on, which is, you know, say a restrictive covenant that stipulates, you know, whether that can be whether that's limited to, say, two-story dwelling, or it depends on, you know, whether you want to protect your orientation or your outlook,
your privacy.
Yes, those sorts of things. So there are other probably more in-depth conversations that we have with our clients to say, right, what outcome are you trying to achieve here, and also making sure that if they do make any restrictions, that they're not limiting the market as well, because you also want to make sure you're getting maximum price for that property.
Indeed.
Yeah, and Torsten, that's the other thing too. I had another frequently asked question the other day where a client rang to say, look, we're thinking of putting in the pool. To what extent do we do it? I mean, do we go the imported tiling, or their option was fiberglass, and do we go a fiberglass pool and spend the money on the landscaping around it? And that question of, you know, are you underdoing it, or are you going to undercapitalize it or overcapitalize it? So,
yeah, and it's a really interesting question. What's been intriguing is just concept, and the fiberglass pool used to actually be mocked a few years ago.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
but the technology of the fiberglass pool shells now have improved so dramatically in the look and feel of them that whilst they're not, I wouldn't put them on par with the in-ground tiled pool.
Yep.
Certainly, there are plenty of cases where you can justify it to say, look, the $100,000 pool, the $100,000 pool isn't worth the investment for that particular property.
And we're talking concrete.
Concrete.
Yeah.
Whereas the alternative fiberglass will cost you $20,000, and that allows you $15,000 for great landscaping. And that can work. So
yeah, we've seen
it's horses for courses.
We've seen it work. We sold a property on a main road where it worked beautifully because the pool was a real feature, but the decking and the landscaping around it, you know, nobody coming through said anything about it being fiberglass.
No, and that's the really wonderful option that you've got now, is that that quality of that shell looks good now, whereas it used to look tacky and, well, without begrudging, we always had the concept of Clark rubber pools.
Yeah, you know? Sure.
But they're a different technology, different look and feel, and importantly, the shapes are different.
Yes.
So you can get some custom-made shapes, or there are a larger selection of those. So as you said, Sam, once you actually put the decking or some wonderful landscaping and tiling, paving around them, they come up really well.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess that leads us back to the plus ones and what's worthwhile. I mean, we're saying,
so the pool is the plus one, is a definite plus one.
It is now. It wasn't 10 years ago. So
is it cyclical?
It just went through a phase where, and I think a lot had to do with the fact that a decade ago we had a number of issues with water storage
yes.
and the ongoing drought.
Yep.
And so that had a big impact on Well, we just became water conscious. Whereas now with the, we've now got the D-cell, dare I say that. That is our stopgap if we need it. Pools have come back in vogue, and also our technology in saving pools with pool covers, but we'll talk about that after the break.
This is The Real Estate Show for Chisholm and Gayman, Weno Bayside.
9531 1245, the one central number to call for Chisholm and Gayman, Weno Bayside. Four offices, where are they, Sam?
Eddie, Port Melbourne, Elwood, Blackrock and Mount Martha. We've got Bayside covered.
Oh, absolutely. And it's for all your real estate needs. Residential, commercial, property management, sales, that one number, 9531 1245. Torsten, we're talking about plus ones today.
Yeah, so we were saying, and the question that Sam asked about the fiberglass versus the concrete tiled pool.
Yep.
The other element that's come into pools as well is the technology, and we were talking about the cyclical change, and we were saying about the water crisis a decade ago, so that had big influence on people actually filling in pools.
Yes.
We had a lot of that going on in the inner Bayside areas. But the other thing that's actually made pools far more attractive is the ongoing maintenance. The actual maintenance of them now, even with the fiberglass, the self-cleaning, the chemicals are far...
less harsh.
Less harsh, and also... there's a number of these franchise groups that have opened that are very affordable for the layperson to actually have a monthly
pool clean,
where they're just servicing, just checking on chlorine levels, etc. And you had the huge advent in the seawater component as well, more natural
salt water
pools.
Okay. Earlier in the show, Sam, we were discussing the tennis court and whether we should sell it or maybe keep it. Does it add value to your property? What do you think?
Yeah, well, that's a good question, Eddie. And it comes down to having a look potentially at the property yourself. So you want to have a look at your house to see what amenity that gives you. So, for example, quite often properties that have an adjoining tennis court, they're built right onto the back garden, or they're right on the side of the house. So quite often, they are an extension of that home's outdoor area.
Yeah.
And if it is a large period home and it's a five-bedroom property, you need to remember that if you have a family with a lot of kids, that there might be an inherent value in the fact that that becomes an outdoor area that's usable, because it's not just for playing tennis. It's for entertaining. It's for playing basketball. It's for all sorts of different sports. And so you need to have a look to weigh up, right, what's the land value of that particular tennis court, and does it detract from the value of your current house or does it add value? And that's a question that we need to analyse depending on the layout and also the orientation and then also the land value.
Torsten, does it matter which area your house is in whether a tennis court is a plus one or not?
Yeah, it does, because I think scarcity of tennis courts in an area is an important one. But again, as Sam was saying, it's that balance between land size and, most importantly, if you sell that tennis court off, what's the end value of the existing house that's left? So you take that away, and then you need to actually ask yourself, and we'll just use some numbers, suggesting that you sell off the tennis court for $1 million.
Yes.
And your house used to be worth $3 million.
Does that devalue your house now to $2 million?
But is your house now only worth $1.5 million because you've got a big house with no land around it? So they're the numbers that you've got to say, whereas in some cases we've advised clients they can get away with selling the tennis court because the house is still worth $2.5 million with some land.
Yes.
So you've got a $500,000 head start. So the numbers, depending on where the area is, the numbers can be different.
With the area as well, you do have areas with density and then you have areas where there's not a lot of density. For example, quite a few of my clients live in South Frankston, where there's huge pockets of properties with tennis courts with 2,000 square meter lots, where they're not one of many. They're actually nearly all the properties in that zone have the tennis court or the land.
Well, the other question is, do you get rid of the tennis court and put in the pool?
Well, look, I think you can do that. But certainly, as Sam was sort of heading towards, there are certain areas that once you take the tennis court away, you diminish the actual number of buyers.
The buyer pool, yeah.
A larger proportion of what's available have got tennis courts.
This is The Real Estate Show. We'll be back shortly.
This is The Real Estate Show for Chisholm and Gayman, Weno Bayside.
This is The Real Estate Show. We continue, Torsten.
So in answer to your question just prior to the break, Eddie, if you are